SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Today's date, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, episode 132, and let's get right into our tip-off topics with Auburn earns the number one seed, the Auburn Tigers. Even though coming off a slide of three out of the last four games, they lost and not looking terribly well down the end of the SEC season, still secures the number one seed for the NCAA tournament. Now, if you really look at the body of work, you're not surprised that Auburn got this. You know, you look at an Auburn team that led the nation in quad one wins, an Auburn team that's been dominant in the best league in the country. But it makes you wonder, with down the stretch with the three out of four losses, should Auburn have gotten the number one seed over Duke? Obviously, you look at a Florida team led by Jahni Broome, consensus first team All-American, probably going to be back up, there he is, to Cooper Flagg for the Naismith Player of the Year. Bruce Pearl's done a fantastic job, but you got to be concerned with the fact of how they're playing right now. You hope that Bruce Pearl can kind of get this team righted and get themselves in the right direction. And I'll be honest with you, folks, and maybe I'm in the minority, I don't think that they should have gotten a number one seed. You look at KenPom, the fact that they have slid all the way to fourth overall in their net rating. Obviously, their net rating still being 35.05, which is absolutely ridiculous. But there were three teams ahead of them. You could make a case for some other teams. But before we get into who got left out, let's go to those other number one seeds and my thought. And obviously, you have Auburn in the South. You have Duke, who is the number one team according to the net and the number one team in the country. Although, obviously, losing Cooper Flagg, it looks like Cooper Flagg will be back. We got to see about Malik Brown or one of the other defensive stoppers. This Duke team, absolutely dynamic, with them being the top of the East region. Let's go to the Midwest, where you have the Houston Cougars, a team that's run roughshod through the Big 12. When they left the American, people were like, Houston, they're going to play real teams. Okay, Calvin Sampson, 2 years, two titles. What are you going to say about him now? The guy's arguably the best coach in the country. And he continues to get disrespected as what he's done. But they have a team, folks, and you got to watch out for. When you talk about the play of L.J. Cryer, when you talk about the play of Uthon, the transfer from Oklahoma. Now, they got to get Juwan Roberts back, who missed the finals of the Big 12 tournament with an ankle injury. But this team is so dynamic defensively, and that man right there is the key. That is Emmanuel Sharp. Listen, he had an ankle injury, and he had rough sledding a little bit, but he was absolutely fantastic during the Big 12 tournament, and what he gives them is another guard that is ready to score. But the team that could be the scariest, folks, is the fourth number one seed, and that's Florida. A Florida team that is playing such great basketball, and what Coach Golden has done. To me, it's the maturation process of a Walter Clayton Jr., a guy that showed his ability to become a top-notch defender and play both sides of the ball. You look at the size that they have. You look at Elijah Martin, the transfer from Florida Atlantic, what he has given this team. Folks, anytime you run through the best league in the country in the SEC, it's going to catch people's attention. What a job by Florida over the last weekend in the SEC tournament. So while we talk about teams, the number one teams, we got to start to talk a little bit about teams that did not get in. If you look at the last four teams to get into the tournament, you're looking at Texas, Xavier, San Diego State, and Carolina. And this is where I had a lot of problems with the seeding. What was the criteria? You based probably Auburn as they had the most quad one wins. But North Carolina had two quad one wins and they got in. They got in over a team like West Virginia that lost DeVries, their best player, in December. Went to Fog Allen, check. Iowa State, neutral site, check. You look at Indiana, how they played down the stretch. I know they did not look good in that game versus Oregon. You look at Ohio State, another team in the Big Ten. And then you look at Boise State, a team that I thought, out of all of them, probably deserved to be in with a net rating of 44, that you can't control who they go out and play, but they stepped up their competition, beat a team like Clemson in a big spot. The NCAA committee has to figure out in the future, what is the criteria? Is it quad one wins? Is it strength of schedule? Is it the net, right? Is it how you're playing? And here's the first four out. And they got to be consistent. They, to me, move the target. And if you want to keep going really quickly about it, how about the simple fact is this? If you're going to use the net, then how is Gonzaga an 8 seed? They have one of the top 10 nets in the country. Their KenPom rating is 9, and they're an 8 seed. So what are we doing here? We have to figure it. This committee's got to get it together, and there needs to be questions answered. You can't change the dialogue or the topic based on the team. Pick a way and keep it that way. Speaking of the tournament, Villanova didn't make the tournament. And it cost Kyle Neptune his job. The embattled coach, and I want people to understand something, because I've been one that said at times that Kyle needs to be let go. This is not anything to say about Kyle the man. Kyle Neptune is an absolute class act. He tried to do things the right way. But damn it, he was following Jay Wright. You know how hard that is? And you give it to a guy that was a one-year head coach. A one-year head coach at Fordham. I get it. Villanova tree, Villanova family. I get it. They're very much about tradition, and I understand that with Villanova. But they set this kid up for failure. Maybe he should have had a more experienced staff. I know he kept Villanova guys, including his guy Mike Nardi, who I love to death. But they did not help this man out. So it's interesting now, because when you have jobs like Indiana, like Minnesota, I'm telling you this right now, this goes to the board as the number one job in the country that's available. Why? They don't have football. And they're in a Big East Conference. They're in a major city which has major ties with recruiting and players. And they have the NIL money. We'll have a guest in a little bit who I think will be a fantastic, fantastic hire for Villanova. And it's someone outside the box. Coming up next after the commercial break, very simply put, the seeds are out. We'll go region by region, from the South to the East to the Midwest and to the West. We'll take a look at the odds to make the Final Four. When we come back, we're on a award tour after this commercial break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 132. And it's time to get into our award tour where we preview future odds. And let's just cut to the chase. Ain't no talk about NBA today. We got time. This is March. This is March Madness. So we're focusing exclusively on odds to come out of each region. Let's start with the number one overall seed and the Auburn Tigers coming in as even money favorites at 1-1, plus 100. Michigan State, plus 490. Iowa State, 5-1. Texas A&M, 13-1. 19-1 for Louisville, 21-1 for Ole Miss, 23-1 for Michigan Marquette, and 31-1 for Creighton, and 41-1 for North Carolina. Folks, I'm concerned with Auburn. I told you I didn't think they should have been the overall number one seed. So I can't take this team the way as they've been playing as of late to come out of this region. So where do you go, right? You start looking around. I think Creighton has a really good chance of beating Louisville, and I think they're going to give Auburn a game. And we'll probably talk about that on a scouting report should that be a matchup in the round of 32. I think UC San Diego could pick off Michigan. A Michigan team that struggled in a Big Ten final. I think Yale's going to take out Yale's going to take out Texas A&M. That's my upset special of that region. But my pick to come out of South comes out of the bottom, and it's Iowa State. Simply put, if T.J. Oshenberger's team could be healthy, and they've had injuries, listen, and it's been a rough go for them, right? But when you look at this roster, and you think about a player of the likes of a Curtis Jones, you look at obviously the point guard play of Keyshawn Gilbert. These guys have battled injuries. Their big man has dealt with injuries as well. But this is a team that they have five guys in double figures, one other guy getting 8.6 points per game, and they defend like no other. If they're healthy, 5-1. 5-1. Iowa State wins the South region. And let's head to the East, where the Duke Blue Devils are, out of any regions, the only one that's at minus money at minus 125. Alabama plus 410. Arizona 8-1. Wisconsin 10-1. BYU 20-1. So on and so forth. We don't need to go any deeper than that. Folks, first things first. Out of any team that's the number one seed, I think Duke's got the best draw in their top half. Right? You look at Mississippi State, a team that's overachieved. You look at a team at Baylor that is underachieved so far this year. And then you get into the other part of that top end of the bracket where you could see upsets. Liberty could take out Oregon. I think a team that should not have been a five seed. And depending on what Caleb Love can get, they can go to a lead, they can go to a Sweet 16, or they can get knocked off by Akron. Bottom side of the draw, I like VCU to get an upset over BYU. We'll talk about this more, once we get into next podcast where you start previewing the best games and the upsets I like. Alabama intriguing at the two seed. But the way Duke is Cooper Flagg is healthy and Brown is back. He's got the shoulder injury. The Duke Blue Devils have the easiest path up top. And I am concerned about Alabama. Go ahead and give me Duke. Let's move on to the Midwest region, where the number one seed is the Houston Cougars. The Houston Cougars are the favorites to come out of there as a plus 140. Tennessee plus 370, 8.5-1 for Gonzaga, 9-1 for Kentucky, 9-1 for Illinois, 12-1 for Purdue. Simply put, they're playing so well right now, Houston, and they are built for this tournament. Guard play, check. Rebounding, check. Defense, check. Experience, check. Coaching, check. They check all the boxes for a team that should go to the Final Four. But the interesting case is I think this is the one where you're going to get one versus two. Tennessee, Houston meet for a chance to go to the Final Four. And really quick, just to get people to wrap their heads around it, you know, Utah State, that looks like a team that could be upset alert over UCLA. And look at the 12-13 seeds. That is both High Point, if they handle the ball and they make it a shooting contest with Purdue, I think they could beat Purdue. And McNeese State, the popular pick last year, I think can take out Clemson. And what I think is Will Wade's last year at McNeese State, I expect him to get a big job, maybe somewhere like the University of Minnesota. Last region, the West. Florida, also minus money, minus 120. Texas Tech, plus 480. St. John's, 6.5. Maryland, 10-1. 14-1 for Kansas, along with Missouri. UConn, 25-1. Simply put, folks, it's amazing that St. John's, I think, gets disrespected because of what they think is the lack of competition in the Big East. They're the best defensive team in the country. R.J. Lewis is the player of the year. Kadari Richmond is a Swiss Army knife. Echefor is a load. And they got who I think is the best coach in the country, Slick Rick the Ruler, Rick Pitino. That guy right there, Kadari Richmond. Don't sleep on Simeon Wolter there in the background. Has done a really good job. But Kadari Richmond is a Swiss Army knife. He can do it all. Score, rebound, assist, block shots, defend, steals, serve your beer, pop your popcorn, and change the channel for you. He can do it all. St. John's, the resurgence is back. First time since 85, 40-year anniversary. St. John's heads to the Final Four. And my national championship, Duke plus 310, 4-1 for Florida. That's Matty George's pick. Auburn 5-1. I'm taking Houston. I told you, they checked all five boxes. Kelvin Sampson's team cuts down the nets and wins the national championship. Coming up next, we'll get into our scouting report. Simply put, two games Tuesday, two games Wednesday. It's the first four games. We'll preview all four matchups, and I'll give you my picks when we come back with our scouting report after this commercial break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 132, and it's time to get into our scouting report where we preview the top games in college and basketball and the NBA. We'll focus solely on the first four games, and we'll just easily go in chronological order. Leading off at 6:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, the first four games are all played out of Dayton, and it's St. Francis Red Flash versus Alabama State. And when you look at this matchup, and when you have teams you're not familiar with, and Alabama State is laying the 3.5 points, you got to try and find metrics and things that can try and match teams up. When you look at this game, the thing that I have a concern with St. Francis PA is the fact that they're 321st in the country in turnover percentage versus a team in Alabama State that's 91st in forcing turnovers, right? But then you go to the other side. Alabama State is fifth in the country in turnovers, meaning they turn the ball over not that much versus the team that doesn't create turnovers and St. Francis of PA. So you have one team that values the ball, right, and steals it versus another team that doesn't steal it and doesn't value the ball. To me, that's a difference here. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to lay the 3.5 points for the Hornets of Alabama State. Second game, this is the interesting one. This is the big one, and that's North Carolina versus San Diego State. North Carolina coming in right now as 3.5 point favorites. And when you start to look at this game, it's basically like strength on strength when Carolina has the ball. Adjusted efficiency, Carolina 22nd. San Diego State, always great defensively, 13th. You look at the fact of effective field goal percentage, Carolina 52nd. Defensively, San Diego State 6th. Carolina doesn't turn the ball over. San Diego State forces turnovers, right? But to me, it's more when you go to the other side of the ball where UNC is 53rd in defensive efficiency adjusted whereas San Diego State is 111th. And the fact that effective field goal percentage defense, Carolina has the advantage. Offensive rebounding, they give up less than what San Diego State is going to get, right? And the fact that obviously they don't shoot the ball well for the three-point line, San Diego State, they are 228th. This is more also a thing of sometimes when teams aren't supposed to make it, VCU 2011, they tend to go on runs. I'm not saying it's a big run, but it's a mini run. Carolina minus the points. And let's head to the games to be played on Wednesday, starting at 6:40 with the Mount. Mount St. Mary's. I do believe this is their first trip to the NCAA tournament. Taking on the American Eagles. Like I said, this game is 6:40 Eastern Standard Time. And when you look at this matchup, same thing. You start digging around and looking around, and where is their advantages? Well, the Mount has advantages when they have the ball, effective field goal percentage offense versus their defense. Neither team is good, I would say, offensively. The advantages are both defensively. I honestly think the play is under 129.5. I think you get yourself into an interesting situation where two teams trying to just extend their season, half-court basketball, things get a little sloppy, a little nervous energy, if you will. Go ahead and take the under, 131.5. Last game, Texas Xavier. A Xavier team and a Texas team that kind of snuck themselves into the tournament. So where do you look? To me, Texas had a good run at the tournament. I like Xavier on the money line to get the job done. They're pretty good offensively, pretty good defensively. Tight game. Just go with it on the money line in regards to Xavier getting the job done. So really quick, going over my picks again for the first four. We're going with Alabama State minus -3.5. We're going to go with North Carolina minus -3.5. We're going to go under 131.5 and Mount St. Mary's versus American. And we're going to go with Xavier on the money line. Coming up next, we have a special guest, and that is former head coach of Iowa, Fran McCaffrey. It's a great interview that we will do with Fran to talk about his time at Iowa and his general thoughts on everything when it comes to college basketball, from recruiting to how he prepares for teams. This is a guy that shows he's got a lot left in the tank. And if I'm a big-time school, especially in Philadelphia, where he's from, I would be looking really closely at a guy like Fran McCaffrey to be your next head coach. We'll be back with the interview with Coach McCaffrey after this commercial break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, and we have a special guest. Our special guest is former head men's basketball coach at the University of Iowa, Fran McCaffrey. Coach, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Great to be with you, James.
And let's get right to it. Incredible run, Coach, you had at the University of Iowa. We can get into the players and all that stuff in a minute, but personally, how are you feeling right now as a coach that's done this for a long time? Do you still feel like you have a lot left in the tank?
No question. I love coaching. I love interaction with young people. You think about it, James, and we met many years ago. Being able to go to work on a college campus, mentor and work with young people, I feel like my life hasn't changed in 40 years. Whether it was at Lehigh, UNCG, Siena, or Iowa, we're doing the same things. We're building relationships with families, recruiting student athletes to our school, and helping them reach their potential. But just the overall opportunity. I mean, I remember the very first time I was able to be a coach, and I said to myself, like, I'm actually getting paid for this. This is what I love. I love the game. I love being in the gym. I love working with my guys and watching them succeed. And then, as you all know, James, that those relationships endure over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So I'll be talking to my guys that I've coached many years ago, and we stay in touch. They follow my teams. I'll get text messages, emails. They'll show up at games. And we always end up the conversation with, I love you. And those bonds, I don't know if anybody truly understands it. You know, after the last game each year, you're in the locker room. It's emotional because typically only one team cuts the nets down. So at some point, you're going to lose a game. And you reflect on the journey. And it's the one thing that has been of the utmost importance to me in my profession and how I view it. I want every player that ever plays for me to say, if I could do this all over, I'd do it all over again. You know, it's all about the journey and the experiences and the things that we get to do that we are fortunate to do that nobody else gets to do. And I mean that sincerely, whether it be play on national television or take a foreign tour, or you know, go on the road and play a really difficult road game and come out victorious and celebrate together and then overcome adversity. If somebody's injured, somebody's in foul trouble, you lose two or three in a row, how do you get it back? How do you approach practice the next day? How do we approach load management moving forward in today's world? Because we almost practice year round. If it's not strength and conditioning, we're in the gym and we're doing skill development or we're actually practicing. We start practice in June. People don't realize that. But that's because that's where we want to be. That's what we love to do. So I am blessed. I am staying in the fight. And I'm going to be coaching somewhere next year.
And it's interesting because I look at your career and everywhere you've gone, you've won. But you've had to build programs. I know Iowa, Dr. Tom Davis, what he did, obviously legendary coach. But talk to me in two parts. Number one, for when you don't have a blue blood program, right? The Kentuckys, the Dukes, where it's just plug and play. What's the key to winning, establishing that winning culture that you have in developing talent? But on the talent side, you haven't had the four-star, the five-star recruit. You took Luka Garza. You took the Murray twins. And let's be honest, recruiting in Iowa is not like recruiting in New York City. Talk to me about developing talent, which I think is still so important in today's game.
You know, James, you said it earlier. Okay, what's the key to it all? The key is culture. How do you build culture? And that's what we've done everywhere I've been. You know, it's easy to talk about, okay, I coached three teams that went to the NCAA tournament from one bid leagues. Nobody else has ever done that. I'm one of the few coaches that have coached four teams that have gone to the NCAA tournament. Each one was a different challenge. All right, so how do you convince young people to come play for you? And how do you continue to help them develop? It starts with character. You know, I'm often asked, James, okay, what do you look for in recruiting? Well, you know, you and I can walk into any gym in America and say, okay, that kid can play. You know, he can run and jump. He's got a great handle. He can shoot the ball. He's big and strong. All right, that's easy. All right. Is he unselfish? Does he prioritize winning? Is he a great teammate? How will he respond when things aren't going so well? How does he respond in today's climate where I'm talking to him 1 minute and his agent's talking to him the next? These are different times. You stay true to who you are and you prioritize character first. You mentioned three players, and we could talk about many more, but I'll talk about the three that you mentioned. Luka Garza, National Player of the Year. Hardest worker every day in practice. When your hardest worker is your best player, your best player is your hardest worker. What better example is that for me coming into the gym every day? I tell people young people that I'm recruiting now, everybody knows Keegan Murray. He broke Steph's record as made the most threes of any rookie in the NBA history. So I talk about Keegan, I talk about Chris. Oh, coach, those guys are amazing. You know, Keegan's the fourth pick in the draft. Chris is the 21st pick in the draft. You know what their high school rankings were? 347 and 348. So let's not be concerned with what our high school ranking is. Let's try to see what we can get your draft position to be. And that's what those guys did. They worked. They listened. They were coachable. I mean, every day, positive attitude in the locker room, on the road, in the dog days, and just delightful people to be around, you know, come to practice. And I have been blessed, James. Every team I've had, whether we were winning big, we were winning okay, or we weren't winning enough, I want to know that when I come to practice every day, I love the group that I'm working with. And I want them, you know, you're sitting in your 2 o'clock class, and when class is over, you make your way over to the gym. We have practice at 3:30. I want them to love the idea, like, I'm going to go get better today. I'm going to be with my best friends. And we're on a journey together that no one else experiences unless you're playing college basketball. And I'm thankful to be here, and I'm thankful to play for the coaches that I have.
And I think that's the important part that I don't think people understand about coaching is it's the relationships. But I think it's also, it speaks to what you talk about with recruiting. I always remember going on the road recruiting. I know you could shoot. I want to see what happens when you get a tough foul. I want to see if you look into the stands at mommy and daddy when things aren't going your way. I want to see when your coach pulls you off the floor, are you cheering for your teammates? That's what I want to see you. I want to see you in the struggle when everything is going wrong for you. How do you bounce back? Because it's a testament to your character. Coming up next after the commercial break, we'll talk more to Coach McCaffrey about his thoughts. We'll get into a little bit about recruiting in this year's climate. It's so much different with the NIL and the portal and the recruiting of your kids and the re-recruiting of your kids. But we'll also talk about the tournament. I'll get Coach's thoughts because he knows it better than me. Who would be a struggle to deal with on a one-day prep? Who's the toughest guy he had to coach with? This is Coach Young with Fran McCaffrey. We'll be back with the Betting Above the Rim podcast after this commercial break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 132. Of course, we're joined by legendary coach Fran McCaffrey. And before we get into this tournament, to me, the big thing that I've looked at as a coach is roster construction, right? In this new age of NIL and agents and the portal, how do you go about building a roster now where you see some teams get it right and some teams get it incredibly wrong?
It's very complicated, and I think that's why you asked the question, James. It's new for all of us. We never dealt with agents before to recruit your rosters. You built relationships. You started early. You identify a kid as a freshman or a sophomore, and maybe you invite him up for an unofficial visit. You get to know his mom and dad, and you call him, and you have conversations after June 15th of his sophomore year. You know, develop relationships. Okay, that's how we did it. Well, now we're getting phone calls from agents while the season's going on. So-and-so is going to go into the portal. Would you be interested? I'm like, I'm trying to coach my team right now. I don't want to think about who might be in the portal. So that's changed. And I think the concept and the way we phrase it is it becomes, when the portal opens, it becomes speed dating. So you're trying to develop those relationships that used to take 2 years, now it takes 2 weeks. And if you come in with the right number, it can take 2 minutes. But do you really know the young man? Do you know what his perspective is on fitting with a team? Is he only trying to put numbers up for 1 year and go then to the NBA? Or is he just trying to maximize his income for the next 2 years since he has 2 years of eligibility? You pointed out it doesn't work out all the time. We've had a couple situations in our league where it's worked out well. You know, you look at, you know, Michigan got some guys, Maryland, and those guys played together. Illinois, same thing. You know, Tom hasn't had a lot of that at Michigan State. We didn't have a lot. We had two. And those guys, you know, Sadu Triori and Drew Thelwell, a blessing to have those two young men on my basketball team. I think it's hard, and I think the point you were making a minute ago, what if you have to sign eight? So you have eight guys coming in, all listening to a different agent, and how do you get them to play together and prioritize winning? So that's the biggest challenge. You can improve your roster, and you can improve it with veteran guys. You can have a team, you know, we'll play a team, they'll all be 24, everybody. You know, it used to be, okay, well, that kid's a freshman, they have two freshmen to play, you know, two couple sophomores. It's not like that anymore. And it's interesting to see how high school kids are being recruited now. You know, you have some high school kids that are really good that are being way overlooked. You have junior college kids that are being way overlooked because everybody just waits for the portal. There's 2,000 names. So you have to be diligent in analyzing not only talent, but health of the athlete, and then do the best you can to have the right conversations with them and the people that have been around them, whether it be their parents or their high school coach or the coach where they came from. I mean, I will tell you, we signed Sadu Triori from Manhattan College. John Gallagher is a coach at Manhattan. He's one of my best friends. John, what can you tell me about Sadu Triori? Beautiful human being. That's all I need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
We'll figure out if he can play. Well, he can play. I know. I watched him. But he is a beautiful human being. And he came into our locker room, and everybody loves him. And he hoops every day, and he cares about his teammates, and he cares about winning. And then we enjoy the journey.
Two-part question here. And I think number one, you're absolutely right when you talk about construction. You got to be careful, right? You got to make sure it's a right fit. And I always said, to me, the teams that combine young talent with experience and you supplement via the portal is always better than just going to just get the best guys. Let's get to this year's tournament. Two-part question. Number one, what team or teams have impressed you the most that you've seen? And if you had a one-day prep, you get through round one, you're going to round two, who were the toughest, or who do you think now are the toughest coaches to prepare for with only 1 day to prep from round one, let's say round two?
Well, I think the hardest thing is the complexity of what they do, whether it be they change defenses or they play a matchup or they press you because not a lot of teams play zone, nor do a lot of teams press. All right, now, obviously, the obvious is, do they have two or three guys that are elite? Because they're going to be a handful. But how are they going to defend you? And how do you get your guys ready? Okay, they're going to switch everything. They're going to be ultra physical. You know, they're that team that's going to foul you five times a possession. And the game is going to be a bloodbath, just a fist fight. Those are the hardest teams, I think, to prepare for. It's style of play. Hopefully, your style, whoever you are, stay true to who you are. Like, we're a team that changes defenses. We've always been that way. We're a team that's going to run. We're going to run on makes and misses. You know, some teams, you see it, James. One of the assistant coaches stands up, he holds up a sign. They run a set play every time down, so they don't inbound the ball quickly. You can get your defense back, but they're going to carve you up with their set plays. Like if you're playing Purdue, all right, Matt runs really good stuff. And there's not enough time in the day to have a walkthrough or run through to all the stuff he's going to do. And there are other teams that run maybe more ball screen continuity. Okay? Those types of things. So, you know, it could manifest itself on both ends of the floor, for example.
We're going to come back. I got more, so I can't stop this. We're going to be back with Coach McCaffrey for another segment of the Betting Above the Rim podcast after this commercial break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 132. We have Coach McCaffrey here for our last segment. And a really important question, Coach, that I have to ask you, knowing that you have a lot left in the tank. If a program came calling today, what kind of coaching situation would interest you the most right now?
James, I want to build a program. I want to be working for an administration that wants to do that and not, all right, and maybe it's naive. I don't think it is. Where we just put a team together. Let's go get a bunch of guys. I have to go get 8 guys out of the portal, and then I got to go get 7 next year and 6 the next year. I want to have relationships with my guys, and I want to have an administration that works closely with me. We work together to build a program, to represent the institution the right way, bring in character young people that we talked about before, play a style of play that fans want to see, and then be in a place that has a fan base that enables me to interact with them in a way that sells the program and provides opportunity for our guys. I mean, think about what NIL was supposed to be, James. It was supposed to be opportunity for young people to profit from their name, image, and likeness. It's not supposed to be pay for play. That's what it's become. But I would want to be where we can provide opportunities for our athletes to connect with the corporate community, the business community, and prepare them for life after basketball. And in the meantime, enjoy the journey and win games. So there's a number of different places out there that's what their goal is and that's what my goal is.
I think you make a great point because, you know, it's amazing. You're not building a team. You're building a new era of tradition. You're building character. You're Correct. Building a program. And I think that's something that you did at your stops at Lehigh along, you know, obviously going to UNC Greensboro. By the way, funny story, I talked to Coach McCaffrey before about me watching that video of Championship Production. Shout out to Ed Jenk. I know we lost Ed not too long ago. What a job he did with Championship Production, building a great coaches clinic. Then off to Siena. What a run. That game against Ohio State, everyone talks about. And obviously, you know, going to Iowa for 15 years is something that is absolutely amazing. Coach, before we wrap this up, anything that you want to add for people to know? Because to me, when I see you on the sideline, people see a guy that's intense, that is no nonsense, I still think about the stare down at the ref on the baseline in one game where I thought it was the entire timeout. If I was an assistant, I probably would have got in trouble because I would have tried to grab you and pulled you away. Anything else in this last minute that you want to let people know that maybe don't know about Coach Fran McCaffrey?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, James. I don't want people to think of me that way. During the heat of battle, there's only one person that can advocate for the players, and that's the head coach, and that's what mm-hmm. I do. Beyond that, I love my guys. I'm as friendly as they come when it comes to interacting with fans, with people. I don't talk much louder than this, that I'm talking with you throughout the course of the day. I've got a great sense of humor. I like to have fun, not only with my job, with the guys, but in life. My assistants love working for me. And there's an incredible amount of respect that has to be across the board. And that's how I live my life. And that's what creates the passion that I have for this profession.
You know, it's amazing as a coach when you get and you talk to someone like Fran, who I've looked up to for a long time since running to him at Eastern Invitational Camp over 20 years ago, and him remembering the story. I got to say this, folks. If you're an AD and you want to build a program and you want to build a culture, it's beyond the 548 wins and the 384 losses. It's beyond the number of championships that he's won and the appearances in the NCAA tournament. Fran McCaffrey has won, and his players respect him and love him. And as a coach that has done it for a long time myself, I could always appreciate that, that your players love and respect you. Coach, thanks for coming on. So,
well, I'll tell you what, James.
Go ahead, Coach.
This has been enjoyable. I have total unbelievable respect for you to reconnect after these years. I appreciate those kind words, and thank you for having me on this podcast. Let's do it again, my friend.
We'll do it again. We'll be back with another Betting Above the Rim podcast on Wednesday. To Matty Pinheiro, George, thanks for doing this. Remember, it's smarter to be on Sports Grid. Good night.